You're listening to Career Chats with Phil Ray Smith, brought to you by Michael Page.
Hello and welcome to the Career Chats podcast, brought to you by recruitment experts Michael Page. In this, our second season, we are focusing on diversity and inclusion, with the emphasis on inclusion. Did you know, according to the charity Mind, one in four people in the UK experiences a mental health problem each year? One in six of us in England report experiencing a mental health problem like anxiety or depression every week. So today, we're talking about mental health and how taking care of your mental health can improve your performance at work. A reminder, as always, you can listen to the Career Chats podcast on the Michael Page website and on Audioboom, Spotify and iTunes. To make sure you get the next episode as soon as it's available, why not subscribe by hitting the subscribe button in your player? So, today's guest was diagnosed with bipolar disorder at the age of 30, and yet he felt such stigma that he would pretend to his work colleagues he was seeing his physio, when in fact he was going to a therapist. He's now a mental health campaigner and the founder of Inside Out, a social enterprise with the mission of ending stigma around mental health in the workplace. Welcome, Rob Stevenson.
Thank you. Really good to be here.
So can I start with that diagnosis, if I may? What was it like getting that bipolar diagnosis?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. I can trace the signs of my condition back to my late teens and 20s, but I wasn't diagnosed till I was 30. And, you know, I tell the story of my first year at university, hearing a knock at the door in my halls of residence, and it's about 7 p.m. And I freeze in fear and pray that these people cannot come into my room. And eventually they walk away and I can breathe and relax. But the thing is, it was two of my best friends coming to pick me up at the agreed time, and I could not face them and I did not know why. And through my 20s, I experienced lots of instances like that, and then at other times being totally the center of attention, exhibitionist, life and soul of the party. But gradually, as I went through my career, it started to get harder and harder to be regular in the workplace, and I had time out of the workplace. And eventually sought help at the age of 30 and got the diagnosis initially of depression, which later became a bipolar diagnosis. And you asked what it was like. It was a sense of relief that I knew I had a problem that could be fixed by the medical profession. I could be given a pill. I could be given some therapy. And you know what? For a while it did fix me, but then it came back. And it came back with a loss of hope.
That must have been all the more gutting to have it come back after you've had that therapy and so on.
Yeah, because I think the way we treat our physical health is if we've got a problem, it can be fixed, and more often than not, it can. But it was really disappointing, and that probably sent me into my darkest period, which at the age of 31, I tried to end my life, and obviously was unsuccessful. But it was from then, that low point, over the next 15 years, really, I learned to manage my condition.
And so tell us a bit about bipolar disorder for people who may not be aware. What does this entail?
Bipolar disorder is a mental illness characterized by extremes of mood. From deep, dark depression, where at its worst, I cannot get out of bed, I cannot look after my children, I cannot do my job, to periods of mania, where I can take risks. I believe that I'm totally right. I can make really bad decisions, take financial risk. But there's also periods in the middle of strength, of superpower, where I'm highly creative, where I've got a real drive and challenge the impossible. So it's a mood disorder, and it's characterized by extremes of mood. For me, I personally get more instances of bad depression. For other people, the mania can be a real problem.
And now I want to talk a bit about the social enterprise that you founded, but before we get there, I mean, clearly you are existing as a productive member of society today.
Yep.
How do you manage your condition?
I think I've learned to manage my condition through trial and error and a process of discovery about what works for me to keep my mental health positive, to proactively manage my mental health. So, yeah, I see a therapist. I take medication for the depression. But I've also discovered that exercise is crucial to me. So I'm a cyclist, and that if I'm not exercising regularly, my form can start to drop. Prioritization of sleep is also really important to me. Social connections, connecting with family. If I have weekends where I'm not connecting with my family, that can also affect my form going into the next week. I give myself a score out of 10 every day. Today I'm an 8. if I'm a 7 and then a 6 and then a 5 in the next few days, I kind of want to know why and what can I do to change that. Mindfulness works for me. So there's a whole bunch of things that I do from a proactive, preventative point of view to stop myself falling into those extremes.
It's really fascinating to hear. So you mentioned that you were diagnosed relatively late in life,
yep.
Say 30. Do you think that that's affected you? Could it have happened earlier? Was that an issue?
Yeah, it certainly was. I think that I didn't know anything was wrong with me, even though my behaviour should have suggested otherwise. I just thought I was either antisocial or I was the life and soul. And that was, in some respects, it's true. That was me. But I didn't know I had a mental illness. And I think the lack of literacy that we have in society, which is changing now, but then, you know, I didn't think to question what I was experiencing. I didn't think to say, I need help. And it was only when I started to spend increasing amounts of periods of time in bed where not being able to do my job that I realized, actually, this is probably abnormal and I probably do need to seek some help. So I think if that literacy around mental health was the same as physical health through my 20s, I might have sought help a bit earlier and I might have learnt that management process a little bit earlier as well. Whereas, you know, that process for me happened from 30 onwards. So yes, absolutely.
And I love your thinking around talking about mental health in the way that we talk about physical health, and I want to talk about that as well.
Yeah.
But even after that diagnosis, you said that you still experienced this stigma, and I mentioned the story of you kind of almost being a bit deceptive about going to see a therapist.
Yeah. Yeah, so for me, there was a fear of being perceived differently. Yeah, stigma's the actual definition of stigma, and we use the word stigma a lot about mental ill health, is a mark of disgrace associated with a person. Now, for me, it was a fear that clients would see me differently. It's a fear that my staff wouldn't want to work for me. It's a fear that my friends would treat me differently. And you know, that fear and just the lack of people talking about mental illness and mental ill health in those initial years post my diagnosis just meant I just didn't consider that one would disclose the fact that I'm bipolar to people. And you mentioned the physio story. For years, I would put physio in my diary when I'd go and see my therapist. When I ran my own business with a team that were, you know, great people and supportive partners, you know, they must have all thought I've got the worst physiotherapist in the world that cannot fix this back injury, you know. And then I'm coming in on a Monday telling tales of 100-mile bike rides. It didn't make sense. And that is stigma.
So I suppose you can understand when someone listening to this or anywhere in the world might think, well, there's no way I'm going to talk to my colleagues, my boss about my mental health because it could really affect how they see me and how I get to do my work.
I think that fear is real. That stigma is real. Actually, we are seeing that stigma start to get broken. And it's been wonderful to see this get onto the agenda of society, the Royals in 2017, by speaking out on their experiences, have done a great job in lifting the profile and businesses following suit. But that stigma is still, it's still real. And people do have a fear that it could be career threatening or limiting, or generally people would perceive them differently. And I think the message I would give to most people is that I hear a lot of stories of people coming out and being open, and we all wish we'd have done it years ago.
So talking of career, let's talk about your career.
Sure.
You founded a social enterprise focused on mental health, but that's not where your career started. How did your working life begin?
Yeah, so I started out as a chartered accountant with PwC in their tax business and qualified there, and then realized I enjoyed dealing with people more than tax law and numbers. So I literally saw an advert for Michael Page running in the Financial Times for someone with tax experience to go into tax recruitment. And I thought, I'd love to have a go at that. So I applied, got the job, and then had a fantastic career with Michael Page, finishing up as a director in the search practice.
I just wanted to add, we're not paying you to say this. This is just a coincidence in your career, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. But I think, you know, the skill set I developed in Page and then in my own recruitment business actually has been the one that I've used to do my work on the Inside Out leaderboard. So it's really a small world how all this happens, but I'm very grateful for my time here.
And so let's talk about Inside Out. You mentioned the leaderboard, but what was the trigger that made you give up kind of your day job in recruitment and do this?
My light bulb moment came in October 2017, and I heard I heard a campaigner called Jeff McDonald speak, and Jeff was telling the story of his anxiety and depression and the loss of a friend of his to suicide. And I saw that there was a movement out there of people being open about mental ill health. And I saw that there was a movement of people trying to end stigma and create healthier workplaces. So I was inspired. I was inspired to be open personally, but I was inspired to think, how could I contribute and use my skill set to make a difference? So I just did attended a lot of meetings, conferences, and kept hearing the message that we do not have enough of our senior leaders who are being open about their challenges of mental ill health and being open and acting as role models. And I thought I could do something about that. I've seen the concept of the power list used very well for LGBT, gender, and other diversity issues, and thought, could we apply that to the mental ill health agenda? And that's where the inspiration for Inside Out came from.
And how hard do you find it to recruit people for your leaderboard? You're talking about senior people here who are willing to go on the record and talk about mental health, right?
I actually find it easier than conducting a regular executive search that I did in my career to date, because I think whilst there is a stigma and there is a fear and there are a lot of people who are not ready to share their stories yet, those that are passionate about this issue and when I put the concept of the Inside Out leaderboard to them, more often than not will say, yeah, this is a great idea and I really want to take part. Because actually, once somebody is out internally and speaking internally, it's a very short leap to do so externally. So I think, out of the 42 role models that we published in year one, we probably had three who declined. So it would have been 45 if everybody said yes. And I think that's because there is a real passion out there to be open and to make positive change. Now, clearly, we are scratching the surface of our leaders in workplaces who are on that leaderboard. And I'm very respectful that it has to be the right time for someone to disclose and come out. But I think there is this willingness to change. So it was easier than I thought it was going to be.
And once you do get someone signed up, so they're a senior business leader, they're talking about mental health, what effect does that have on their own organisations, but also in wider society?
When our leaders speak out on this issue, it is the start of culture change. And it is a start of culture change to one that allows everybody in that workplace to prioritise their mental well-being and also seek help if they're struggling with their mental health. And I think to get culture change, you need that leadership engagement. So I think that's the real important part internally. I think externally, it helps normalise the conversation. And I think the role models from year one of the leaderboard will inspire and are inspiring other leaders to follow suit. So I will always be grateful for those 42 that boldly put their name to the first leaderboard. But I think we see some leaders doing it, other leaders will want to follow because they can see it will be good for their organisation as well. And ultimately, I would like to see Inside Out do itself out of a job, that there's no need to be publishing leaders with mental ill health because we've normalised the conversation.
I guess you must have heard some pretty powerful conversations along the way from these leaders. Anything that particularly sticks in the mind?
Well, we could talk for a long time on that. I think there are a few amazing stories. The Commissioner of the London Fire Brigade, Danny Cotton, she was the first female commissioner, and a few months into the job, Grenfell happened, the tragedy that is Grenfell. And she realised that post that tragedy, if her firefighters were going to seek the help that they needed to recover from the trauma they witnessed and experienced, she needed to show vulnerability and publicly declare that she was seeing a therapist. And she did this at the time of intense public scrutiny. That gave her firefighters the permission to do the same. And then since then, has worked tirelessly on changing the culture of the organisation to allow people to better look after their mental well-being. From the workplace, another very powerful story from Amanda Lambert, who is the HR director, the people director of Three, the mobile business. So her challenges of mental ill health came to a head in a board meeting where she visibly broke down and was in tears, but stayed in the board meeting for the day and sat through the presentations. And at the end of the day, the CFO at the time, Richard Woodward, came up to her and gave her a handwritten letter. And in that letter, he disclosed his experiences of acute health anxiety for the first time with anyone other than his wife. He gave her a hug and the number of his therapist. She then called that therapist, got better, came back into the workplace after a period of recovery, and together they shared their story to the whole business. That then transformed the culture, with a number of people putting their hands up and seeking help, but also creating a culture that prioritizes well-being. So now they have something called Wellbeing Wednesdays, where over the lunchtime in Wednesdays, people are encouraged not to put meetings in the diary. And guess what? They have lunch together. They connect as humans in that workplace. So that is the impact that we see from our leaders sharing their stories.
And wow, what stories, as you say, really inspirational. And the lessons and the outcomes from a story like that shared is easy to see. One thing that caught my eye, you took part in the Mind Cycle Tour, a 3,000-kilometre ride, basically based on the course of the Tour de France. Sounds pretty grueling. So why were you doing that?
Yeah, it seemed like a good idea at the time. I rode the Tour de France route on a static trainer, but the idea was to take a bunch of bikes into different workplaces. And whilst I was riding that day's stage of the tour, so 7-8 hours on the bike, we'd get other people coming to do a little half an hour challenge to ride with me. But it was a mental health awareness raising campaign and fundraising for MQ, the mental health charity. And the idea was to actually make it a soft platform for people to come and have a bit of fun on the bikes, but then have a conversation about mental health and well-being. And the branding of it all, I'd got bipolar written on the back of my jersey and on the team's t-shirts. And there's a problem with mental health awareness events in that you'll get the same people turning up, the people who've got an interest, a challenge themselves or a family member. But there's a whole bunch of other people in the workplace who think mental health does not apply to me. And so we were getting men particularly, who traditionally us guys don't open up, coming to have a go on the bikes. And then by the end of it, we're having a chat about mental health. And we took this roadshow over the 21 days of the tour around different workplaces, exhibitions, open spaces of London and the UK. And had a significant amount of people that I think came and viewed the roadshow. But yeah, at a personal level, it was a tough challenge, both physically and mentally, riding the Tour de France each day whilst having these conversations with people who came to ride with me.
Sounds exhausting. But I mean, that's really interesting how you say people come to, their attention is caught by the bicycles and the riding, and then it ends up the conversation about mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. And we now do events called Mind Cycle events where we take the bikes back into workplaces. We were with one of the large banks a few weeks ago, and again, it was a fun bike event that they got people on to do a team-based challenge, but then we're having a conversation about mental health. So it's just trying to attract a wider cross-section of the workplace to have those conversations.
It is a topic of conversation like never before, mental health, and thank goodness for that. I mean, it is communication, as you say, is the key. Why is it on the news agenda and on the social agenda more? Is it just because we are talking more?
I think mental health is on the agenda. I referenced the Royals earlier. The Royals did a great job with the Heads Together campaign of elevating the conversation. So I think that's part of it. But I think the workplace has grabbed onto this issue correctly in that it is a real opportunity to A, do the right thing for the humans that work for us. But B, I think we're also starting to realize that actually it is an opportunity to create healthier workplaces that allow people to thrive, to flourish, to move up that mental health continuum and actually be happier and higher performing. So I think it's one of those times where the moral case and the business case and the financial case are aligned for the employers and the workplace. So I think workplaces see that we have to look after people better and are trying to do that. But I also think that we're starting to see that there's a real business opportunity for doing so as well. So I think that's why we're seeing this explosion, because it's on the agenda. And so it's forcing companies to look at it. And when they do, I think they're also seeing the opportunity.
So Inside Out, you mentioned that you'd like to ultimately see yourself put out of business.
Yep.
But what are your ambitions in the perhaps shorter term or nearer term for the enterprise?
Yeah, Inside Out, I think, can be an indirect measure of how stigma is being broken down. So the leaderboard in the business world for year one was 42 role models. I'd like to see that at 70 for year two, then 100. And as we see the growth of the business leaderboard, we can say, actually, the conversations are becoming more normalized. I'd also like to see inside out, cover other areas of society, so public sector and government. I'd like to see some ministers on there. I'm talking to a chief executive of a National Health Trust to join the leaderboard. We're also going to look at sports professionals, entertainers, and then take the initiative globally. So we're launching it in the US next month, and would hopeful in Australia that we will actually have a leaderboard in September. So it's really to export that idea and get more of our leaders globally putting their name to the leaderboard.
Well, I love the ambition, and I can't see it doing any harm to widen out in any sense. I guess sporting figures as well. I mean, some sporting figures have taken a stance on depression and so on, but again, they're such role models that it would be amazing to see.
Yeah, and I think the profile of sports professionals and entertainers will help further amplify the initiative. I think, you know, getting back to the workplace, it's important we have role models in the workplace that we can identify with, but it's also good to see some of our heroes who are being open about their struggles with mental ill health, and you know, we certainly look up to those people. So I think both are really important.
I take that point about balance between this world of celebrity and the world of kind of you and I,
yeah.
You talked about how mental health is often thought of intrinsically mental ill health. Is that problematic, or should people kind of be talking about mental health in a more positive sense as well?
Absolutely. I think mental health as a brand, an identity problem. So in a lot of the talks that I do and the keynotes, I put a slide up with a typical image of a lady in black and white with her head in her hands experiencing anguish. And yet I took that image from page one of Google Images when I Googled mental health. I did not Google mental ill health or mental illness or anguish. And immediately when we say the words mental health, we think of mental illness. And that is a problem in society because, you know, if you think of physical health, you think of vibrancy, you think of athleticism, you think of, you know, people enjoying life. It's aspirational. We want to be there. Think of mental health, we're actually immediately thinking of illness. Now, the most important statistic, I would say, in mental health is one in one. We all have it, and we can all influence it. Now, if we have this idea that we're on a mental health continuum, and actually we should aspire to be more towards the thriving end, then guess what? What are we going to do? We're going to try and influence our mental health like we do our physical health. You know, we know we should exercise more, we try to eat healthily, et cetera, et cetera. What are we doing for our minds to stay well or actually be more thriving? And I've had to undergo that period of discovery because I've needed to because I have a disorder. But if you have average or moderate mental health or known as languishing, it's probably 65% of the population. What are you doing to manage your mental health? So it's an interesting one. I think it starts with that brand problem of how we perceive mental health.
And from your experience then, you've spoken to many people at the top of organisations, big organisations, some of them, about mental health. What about perhaps smaller organisations, the SMEs of this world? If you think, you know, someone's listening, they think, yeah, that sounds like a really great idea. We need to be tackling mental health. But, you know, where do I start? What's the first step? What would be a constructive first step that they could take?
Yeah, I do a lot of presentation to boards on actually what is the journey of introducing a policy on mental health and creating that mentally healthier workplace. And that journey would go from, first of all, breaking stigma. So we need to get people talking about mental ill health, and we need board level or senior leadership support of the initiative. And then when you want to start getting people talking, you get people like me in to come in and share some lived experience, and alongside, ideally, people from the business who are sharing their own challenges. And then that information would go on a kind of intranet site or have a town hall meeting, and it really creates immediate impact. And then what you will get is other people then start opening up and sharing their own stories. Now, if you're getting people talking about mental ill health, you need people to listen. So what support are you putting in place in terms of training, in terms of mental health first aiders, in terms of having mental health champions or a network where people can go and talk to somebody about what they're experiencing? So you need to, I think about when you're getting people to open up, are you putting the right level of resource in place? And so it's about making sure that you've got those people to listen. I think then the process goes around thinking about the sort of benefits that you offer, and then start that process of creating cultures where everybody can prioritize well-being. So can we do some very simple initiatives that allow people to, I don't know, walking Wednesdays where people get together and go for a walk at lunchtime, or mindfulness brought in to on a Friday. So some of these things that can help everybody in the workplace think about their well-being. And then we need to have constant reinforcement over the year. Too many times I see organizations do Mental Health Awareness Week, have a load of events, and then think, right, we've done mental health, and what about the other 51 weeks of the year when we have it? So can we do kind of a rolling educational program where we'd get a speaker into organization each month to talk about some of the aspects of well-being, like nutrition, like exercise, like sleep, like stress management, and keep that conversation going through the year? And then making sure that, you know, our policies of the organization are reflective of, you know, good practice around mental health, and the benefits there can support that.
And are there any resources that people can kind of access, perhaps online, to help with maybe things like training and policy?
There are a huge amount of resources out there. I think one good starting point would be the Heads Together Workplace Gateway that you can find from the Heads Together campaign. And that is an amalgamation of all the resources that are out there, and case studies and good practice from other organizations. So as a starting point, that's pretty good. Business in the Community have got some good resources as well. But there are also some great free tools out there as well, like things like the Samaritans have a tool called Wellbeing in the City, designed to bring the listening skills of the Samaritans into the workplace. And that's an online learning program that actually give people some of the skills to have those conversations about mental health. So, yeah, there's great resources out there, but that's probably where I'd direct people to.
Okay, so let's get on to perhaps some advice section, tips and tricks.
Yep.
What should we be doing? So, first of all, at an employee level.
Yep.
You've got a job, you're working, so you get out of bed, but you've maybe got some anxiety. How can you deal with those kind of issues?
Yeah, so at an employee level and you're experiencing some symptoms of mental ill health, be it anxiety or depression, I think the first thing we need to do is talk. We need to talk to people about it, not carry that burden on our shoulders. We need to seek help, and we need to understand that it's okay to do so. So if you are struggling, talk to someone who you love. Go and see your doctor. If you have those benefits in the workplace, use them. Go and see a therapist. There's nothing wrong with doing that. It's a good experience. I think we should all see therapists from time to time. So I think the big one on if we feel like we're struggling is seek help.
Right. And you speak to a lot of senior business leaders as part of the leader board. What should the people at the tops of our businesses be doing?
Our leaders need to get behind this agenda, in my opinion. I welcome any leaders who are keen to share their experiences and join the leader board. But actually, you can get behind the agenda in other ways as a leader. I think John Flint, the CEO of HSBC, would say that he's never experienced a mental ill health disorder, yet talks vulnerably about leading a business and some of the stresses and challenges that he might face. So I think our leaders need to champion the agenda, show a bit more vulnerability and authenticity, and really think of making the well-being and health of our employees a strategic priority or value of the organization, and put that caring for employees higher up the agenda.
I do love that message about showing vulnerability. I mean, it's a thing that we're kind of trained not to do, but when you do, it sends out a very powerful message.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that If you are a follower of a business leader, when they do that, when they can share vulnerability, when you know that they're human and yet they're successful despite those vulnerabilities or because of, we actually are more engaged and are more liable to follow them and do the right thing for the organization.
Okay, so you have all this experience now under your belt as a mental health campaigner. Also, as you mentioned earlier, a recruiter.
Yep.
So what are your top tips maybe for enjoying a happy and fulfilled career?
Happy and fulfilled career. Good question. I think that for me, it is finding your purpose within what you do as far as you can. Now, I think that I'll caveat what I'm about to say in that I understand that, you know, we don't all have the opportunity to love everything we do every second of our day. You know, it's work is work at times, but I think finding purpose in what you do and having a balanced life around that is really important. So that's number one, find your purpose. Number two is actually balance work and life and home a lot better. So, you know, can we take those breaks in the day? Can we prioritize our well-being every day? Can we not check our emails the first thing we do when we wake up? Can we leave our technology outside of the bedroom? Can we prioritize sleep? Can we make sure we're connecting with our family? All of these things will make us better from a mental health point of view, and ultimately they'll make us more effective in the workplace. So I'd say prioritization of well-being and all of the aspects that make that up are really important. And so for me, it comes down to balance, really. It's balancing what we do with what we do outside of work and what we do family-wise. So find your passion, find your purpose, and balance. I'd say those are the two that I'd get people to focus on.
It sounds like great advice to me. So thank you for sharing that advice. Thank you also, though, for sharing, above all, your really personal story. I think as you really have hit the nail on the head talking about these things, makes it so much easier for others to do the same and get in touch with feelings that they may be having themselves. So really appreciate a fascinating career chat today. Thank you very much. So do tune in next time when we'll be getting the benefit of another guest's insights and expertise. You can listen on the Michael Page website and on Audioboom, Spotify and iTunes. To make sure you're getting the next episode as soon as it's available, why not subscribe to Career Chats by hitting the subscribe button on your player. One last favour, if you've liked what you've heard so far, why not give us a 5-star rating on iTunes? It really does help in spreading the word. On subjects like this, spreading the word is important. So thanks for listening. Thanks again, Rob. See you next time.
Thank you.